This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the U.S. Supreme Court deals a blow to the Trump administration's effort to overturn a critical Obama-era immigration policy, and U.S. President Donald Trump issues an executive order which extends restrictions on foreign work visas and legal immigration to the United States. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. In the run-up to his electoral victory in 2016, then-candidate Donald Trump campaigned vigorously on his opposition to illegal immigration. He advocated building a wall along the southern U.S. border with Mexico to keep out undocumented workers. Upon assuming the presidency of the United States, Mr. Trump embarked on initiatives to curb illegal immigration, one of which was rescinding the Obama-era executive order that would end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, also known as DACA. As VOA's Alini Barros explains, it is a program that shields from deportation non-citizens brought to this country illegally as children. According to the Wall Street Journal, the Supreme Court ruled in a 5-4 vote that, quote, the Trump administration acted arbitrarily when it moved to end the program for the young immigrants, also known as Dreamers. The court found the administration had failed to offer adequate reasons for ending the program, so the ruling keeps the program in place for now, end quote. The court's decision was met with relief, if not glee, by Dreamers and immigration advocates, and deep disappointment by the Trump administration. Then, on June 22nd, President Trump issued an executive order entitled Proclamation Suspending Entry of Aliens Who Present a Risk to the U.S. Labor Market Following the Coronavirus Outbreak. The Trump administration argues the order is likely to preserve approximately 525,000 jobs. According to the Hill newspaper, the alphabet soup of temporary work visas to be suspended through the end of 2020 include H-1B visas, H-2B visas, H-4 visas, L-1 visas, and certain J-1 visas. Analysts say it represents an effort by the Trump administration to mollify the so-called immigration hawks and others who argue that American workers should be given priority, especially amid the economic downturn caused by the coronavirus pandemic. According to the Hill newspaper, quote, H-1B visas are used for skilled workers and are common in the tech industry. It is the largest visa program of those included in the order, as its recipients can stay for multiple years. H-2B visas apply to seasonal workers, and H-4 visas are given to spouses of H-1B visa holders. Bloomberg News reports, quote, barring highly skilled workers could pose a risk to future innovation and economic growth. That's why other nations like Canada and the United Kingdom are more than willing to scoop up talented immigrants, end quote. Well, for more on the Supreme Court ruling and Mr. Trump's executive order to suspend the issuance of certain temporary work visas, we have two distinguished immigration analysts. David Beer is an immigration policy analyst at the Center for Global Liberty and Prosperity at the Cato Institute. That's a libertarian think tank based here in Washington. He specializes in visa reform, border security, and interior enforcement. And Claudia Flores, she's the immigration campaign manager at the Center for American Progress, and that's a Democratic-leaning policy group also based in Washington. Previously, Claudia led the immigration policy portfolio for the National Institute for Reproductive Health. And both panelists join me via Microsoft Teams as we continue to practice social distancing in the age of the coronavirus pandemic. David Beer, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
And Claudia Flores, welcome to you.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be joining.
David Beer, let me start with you. Remind us why former President Barack Obama issued the executive order that we now call DACA in the first place. What were the barriers to passing permanent legislation?
Well, Congress couldn't come to an agreement about this subject. 2010, the House of Representatives did pass the DREAM Act, but the Senate declined to take it up. So in lieu of Congress's failure to act, President Obama created a program that on its face is simply a program of deferring people's deportations and allowing them to work legally in the United States. And that was the two big benefits of the DREAM Act. But the DREAM Act also included a path to citizenship, a path to permanent status in the United States. Those aspects are not included in the DACA program. And really, it's an executive action. So it's up to whatever the president decides whether or not to keep it. The Supreme Court agreed with that position. It just said that the administration did not explain its rationale for why it was rescinding the program as is required by law.
Turning to you, Claudia Flores, for your take on the whole point of why former President Obama issued the executive order in the first place and the significance of the Supreme Court's decision to deny the Trump administration's request to reverse that Obama-era executive order on what we call DACA.
I mean, DACA, since its inception, has been a program that was created under tremendous pressure by the immigrant community, and that includes undocumented youth. President Obama, as David mentioned, created this program in 2012, but he did so only after receiving tremendous pressure from immigrant organizers who were asking the administration that in light of the congressional inaction to provide a permanent protection, there was a need to urgently protect hundreds of thousands of people who had been living in the United States most of their lives. So the DACA program since 2012 has protected more than 800,000 young immigrants who arrived to the United States as children. And the interest behind the program are so huge that what we saw last week is tremendous relief, not just for Dreamers, but for the communities that depend on them. We're talking about 200,000 of them that are working on the front lines of the nation's coronavirus response. We're talking about 29,000 who are healthcare professionals. So the stakes in this case were particularly high, and we were very relieved to see that the court sided with the majority of Americans who want to keep Dreamers protected.
So turning back to you, David, this was a big disappointment for the Trump administration. As you said, though, the court basically denied the Trump administration's request on sort of procedural grounds. So what does this mean now for President Trump, who is now running for re-election? Is there any time for the Trump administration to do something to combat the DACA program, or do we wait for the election? What are the implications?
Well, the administration says it's actively working to try again to rescind the program in accordance with the law, providing a full explanation of its reasons for wanting to end the program. Initially, the problem arose because the administration did not want to say that we want to end the DACA program and remove all DACA recipients from the country, subjecting them to deportation. And the Supreme Court said, basically, you have to say both of those things. You have to say both that you want to stop them from working legally in the United States and that you want to subject them to deportation if that's what you're doing. And in this case, it seems like the administration is saying, yes, we're willing to now say that. We're going to go back to the drawing board, come up with a new rescission order that explicitly states our reasons for wanting to end the program. And once they do that, once they fulfill the requirements of the Supreme Court's decision, they will be able to rescind DACA in its entirety.
But is there time to do that before the election?
Well, I mean, before the election, before his term runs out, certainly before the election, yes, potentially we could see it in the next couple of days. The timeline here is really constrained only by the willingness of the administration to put out a document on the subject. I'm sure they're running all the traps, trying to make sure that it passes all of the legal standards laid out by the court, but we could see it imminently. And once the document is out, it can become binding law very quickly.
Turning to you, Claudia Flores, as you said, the Dreamers and those who advocate for them were very relieved, but this is temporary, right? I mean, do you fear that something else could happen that the Trump administration could come up with, as David said, you know, another rationale and try to rescind DACA before the election?
It is certainly possible that the administration can try and, you know, end the program one more time. I mean, the challenge here is that, as mentioned, they may be running out of time. And, you know, we also know that the DACA program is an extremely popular program. We're talking about majority of Trump supporters, you know, in favor of protecting Dreamers. So it seems like the president wants to pick a political battle that may not be in his favor, especially getting so close to an election. We also know that, you know, in case of DACA recipients, many of them are renewing right now. There is the urgency to ensure that the administration is complying with the court's order. And that means reinstating the program as it was in 2012. And that means that USCIS should be processing new applicants. The Center for American Progress estimates that there's about 300,000 young immigrants that would be eligible for the DACA program that would be aging in essentially to the DACA program. And if the government were to reopen, you know, that would mean that people that are, for instance, graduating high school would be able to have some certainty before they go off to college or just make their next moves in their lives. So there's a lot at stake. And I think for the president to pick this battle in an election year, it may not be the best idea, especially with such broad support from a majority of voters, including those in his own space.
Well, that's a very interesting point that Claudia makes, David, that this is a popular program. I mean, these were children of undocumented immigrants. They know no other country than the United States. They feel more American than their place of birth. They came through no fault of their own. So do you think that this is probably a bad time to pick a political battle for Mr. Trump, as many Republicans, people in his own party, actually favor this program? And the other point is President Trump was willing to continue the program as long as Democrats were willing to fund the border wall. Of course, that was a non-starter back in the day. He wanted to do a trade-off. Okay, I'll support DACA, but I need you to support my building of the border wall, which of course they rejected. So just one more comment from you before we go on to a break with respect to the popularity of this program and perhaps the bad timing with respect to trying to rescind the program at this time.
Well, the polls show broad popularity for the DACA program. It's not at all clear whether that's a motivating factor for many voters or not. I would quibble with your description of President Trump's demands, however. He has not only requested border wall funding in exchange for extending DACA. He's demanded that we reduce legal immigration by 50%, that we eliminate asylum protections for people fleeing violence at the border. These are the kinds of requests that have derailed the bipartisan negotiations in Congress. Border wall funding was one thing. Many Democrats agreed to give him border wall funding. He turned it down and then took the money from the military in order to build the border wall. So now that request is off the table. He doesn't need the money from Congress anymore to do this. So there's really no deal to be had here, which is why under President Trump, we will not see a deal on DACA.
Thank you for making that clarification, David. We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are David Beer, from whom you just heard. He's immigration policy analyst at the Center for Global Liberty and Prosperity at the Cato Institute, and Claudia Flores. She's immigration campaign manager at the Center for American Progress. Both groups are based here in Washington. And we are coming to you via Microsoft Teams as we continue to social distance. We're discussing the DACA Supreme Court ruling and its implications, as well as in the second half, the implications of President Trump's executive order on limiting visas for legal immigration. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a big shout out to a loyal listener, Amir Jamil from Pakistan. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send us an email to encounter@voanews.com, or preferably leave a comment and like us on our Facebook page. Well, back to our discussion, and let's take up visa restrictions. So, David, let me start with you again. Explain briefly what this visa restriction order, this executive order, is expected to do. Do you think that it will achieve its intended ends? In other words, restricting guest workers like engineers, scientists, or even au pairs, these live-in family aides. Will that help the U.S. economic recovery and free up jobs for Americans? And will Americans, you think, seek to fill those jobs?
Well, the order suspends nearly all permanent immigration to the United States, as well as the major temporary worker programs that allow foreign workers to come to the United States to work temporarily. Those foreign worker programs include, you mentioned high-skilled immigrants, but also for low-skilled immigrants. Do I think that the order will help the economy? I do not. I think that right now, when you're in a recession and you're trying to recover your economy, as the administration is stating its purposes right now, you want jobs filled as quickly as possible. So the virtuous cycle of production and consumption and expansion of business can happen faster. And that's what foreign workers allow at the most basic level. As soon as a worker fills a job, they create demand for goods and services elsewhere in the economy that equals the production that they create within that firm. So if you have someone who hires someone as a roofer in Texas, it allows that roofing company to expand production, buy more product for their business, more equipment. All of those things create permanent jobs in the economy elsewhere for Americans. And you do not want to slow down that process of hiring and production and consumption when you're trying to recover from an economic downturn. In particular, if you look at some of the programs that this order targets, we are restricting extremely high-skilled people who are creating enormous numbers of jobs for Americans. We're talking about CEOs of businesses who can't transfer to start new branches in the United States now as a result of this order. We're going to have a devastating effect on our economy when foreign multinational companies cannot invest in the United States because they can't bring their people in. And that is going to send more businesses to other countries. It's going to deprive Americans of higher paying jobs here in the United States.
So turning to you, Claudia Flores, David basically says that this order may in fact achieve the very opposite of what it is intended to do. He is saying, you know, this restriction of high skilled and even low skilled workers will not in fact help the U.S. economy. How do you see this executive order?
That is correct, Carol. There is no sound economic argument behind this policy decision. As mentioned, this is another attempt to really end our legal immigration system. And what we see now, similar to the threat against DACA, this is another way through which the Trump administration is pandering to its xenophobic base to try to rally the troops, per se, before an election year. We know that this latest visa ban is going to not just harm people who are in the United States, right? We're talking about workers who may also consider bringing their families here. But in terms of business and job creation, I mean, this is a big blow to innovation, to the American economy. And that is why many business leaders have already been outspoken about this, you know, in opposition of this latest policy move. But we think that the Trump administration is going to continue issuing some of these policies that, while they hurt American workers at the end of the day, you know, this is just another effort by which Trump and specifically Stephen Miller in the White House, they're trying to really send a message to their base that the president is committed to ending immigration to the United States.
So back to you, David. Claudia mentioned Stephen Miller. He's one of Mr. Trump's top immigration advisors, opposed to not just illegal immigration, but even various forms of legal immigration, trying to restrict. We have never seen so many restrictions on legal immigration since perhaps the 1920s. But at any rate, would you agree that this executive order restricting visas for very high-skilled and some low-skilled workers, that it is more of a political ploy in the run-up to the November election, just as Claudia said, and as other analysts argue, to give the sort of perception that Mr. Trump is trying to create jobs for Americans, but in reality, you know, it's more of a bid to pander, as Claudia said, to a very nationalistic economic base, one that is very anti-immigrant.
Well, I certainly think that they think it's good politics. Politicians rarely do things that they think are bad politics. That said, I think that they also believe in a discredited economic theory of the world, namely protectionism, and this idea that we can make a more prosperous economy by banning people from participating in it. I mean, this economic theory leads to the absurdity that places that are depopulated should be wealthier or more prosperous because there's less competition for jobs there. No, what we want is a highly competitive economy where lots of people want to come and participate and contribute to our overall prosperity. That's what wealthy, expanding, growing countries do. They attract talented people, people who want to contribute their skills and their abilities to making the country a better place. That's what immigrants do. They just don't see it that way and have really fully bought into the idea that new workers entering the economy make the country poor. Economic theory would dispute it, but we don't even need to rely on economic theory. We have plenty of empirical evidence throughout history of the United States where we've experimented with both expansion of immigration as well as restriction of immigration. And no matter how you look at it, the effects that they're talking about occurring have not happened. During 1980, for example, the labor market in Miami expanded by 7% in 4 months. This would be like 22 million people entering the United States in 4 months. A massive expansion as a result of Cubans arriving as refugees from Cuba. And the economic evidence on this point is entirely clear that they did not result in an increase in unemployment in Miami relative to other similar cities. And so that example of just an absolutely astounding amount of immigration being absorbed by an economy that was already in a recession demonstrates that the fundamental basis of protectionism is wrong. Economies can expand as a result of immigration rather than contract.
So as we close, Claudia, I just want to add that former Vice President Joe Biden, the Democratic nominee, also is saying about this particular executive order, as well as Mr. Trump's attempt to rescind DACA, that he thinks that it's an attempt to distract from the Trump administration's failure to lead an effective response to COVID-19. So again, that's the opinion of Democratic nominee Joe Biden, who vows, if elected, that he would immediately reverse the Trump administration's policies that separate parents from their children, and he would reinstate Dreamers protections and presumably maybe try to jumpstart a discussion on comprehensive immigration reform. So in that light, as we close, let me ask you, where do we go from here? And what would you like to see happen that would be sustainable with respect to the Dreamers, with respect to immigration reform?
Yeah, Carol, I think we have to be very clear that, you know, in the middle of a global pandemic, the president has exploited this public health crisis to issue all these restrictions on visa, on green cards, and, you know, all the things we've spoken about. In terms of what can be done, I mean, we are in the middle of an election year. I think this is going to be a referendum on the president's policies. Is America going to be open to innovation? You know, are we going to keep the door open to some of the brightest minds in the world? I mean, that is a question that voters will have to ask themselves. And it's also about families, right? The reality is that all these policies have huge implications for people who live in the United States. We're talking about, you know, highly specialized workers who cannot bring their spouses in light of this policy change. So for voters who are going to the polls in November, they're going to have to ask themselves which candidate is going to provide the protections that they need. For Dreamers, ideally, we would like to see a Congress that moves towards permanent protections. But we saw that the House passed H.R. 6, which is the American Dream and Promise Act. It's been sitting for more than a year in the Senate and nothing has been done. So at this point, I think the fate of Dreamers and many immigrants relies on the ballot. And we will see what happens over the next few months and whether the president will continue to issue more disastrous policies like we've seen in recent weeks.
All right. Well, I'm afraid on this immigration edition of Encounter, that's just about all the time we have. We will be following this very important issue in the weeks and months ahead. I'd like to thank my guest, David Beer. He's immigration policy analyst at the Center for Global Liberty and Prosperity at the Cato Institute, and Claudia Flores, immigration campaign manager at the Center for American Progress. Thanks so much to both of you for your terrific insights. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.